All right, well, welcome back, whānau. We're doing our special on Is the Grass Greener on the Other Side of the Tasman? I, of course, am Matt Tukaki standing in for Moiawa. And, you know, after singing that song at the top of the hour, Daphne Walker, Heidi Mai, Everything is Kapai, we've been to Queensland, we've been to New South Wales, and now we're going to be talking to some whānau representing, I would say, the Tainui Waka. And joining me is Wahana Mahalo and whānau. Welcome.
Kia ora, Matua.
Oh, so good to have you, fellas. So where are you, fellas?
So we are currently at the Four Seasons Hotel in Sydney. We have the Waikato Whānui Ki Roto Poi Hākina 30th celebration this Saturday, so we're preparing for our event.
What a perfect time, eh? What a perfect timing we have. So three questions I've got for all of you, and any one of you can take these. Why the move to Australia? Why did you move to Australia?
Well, I'll take the first part of that question. So I'm the eldest of 10 kids, 54 grandkids, 63 great-grandkids, and I actually can't remember how many great-great-grandkids.
Wow.
But there was a point in my life where I wanted to try and do things for myself.
Mm.
It's a big responsibility when you have to be a role model for such a big ope like that. And my parents were supportive of that decision for me to move away. And I thought, well, if I didn't survive and I didn't like it here, I could get back to Aotearoa in 3 hours. So hence the reason why I only made the move across the ditch. But I mean, Uncle Mano, he's been here longer. He might want to extend on that.
Kia ora, Machi.
Kia ora.
Ko Mano tai o tēnei. Kia ora. Yeah, good question. For myself, I'm going back over just about 45 years ago, I was heading to Europe, myself and my lovely wife. And the idea was to stop off here in Sydney, en route to Europe. Being a rugby league fanatic, this is where the game was at. And just wanted to be in that space at that time. So the idea was to stop over, get a bit of money together here, and then continue on to England. And over 40 years...
I came in first. I came in 88, and I came with our rugby league team, Manukau Magpies. We had team that came over here for the weekend, and I absolutely loved it. We actually stayed in the city, but I loved it because it was actually warm. It was there was plenty of mahi here, and I also had family here.
Mm.
So I decided to actually the next year just sell up everything and then come to Sydney itself, because I felt that there was more for me here in this country. I've been here for more than 30 years, and I've been very lucky to have actually learnt my reo in Sydney. And that was through Tarangi that we have here in Poi Hākina. And I was one of the founding members of that rupu, that kura reo. So my journey in terms of living in this country was actually just I felt that it just suited me.
Mm.
And I think that's how it is for a lot of our whānau. Some don't want to leave, but some find that there's more opportunity here. And they can actually enjoy their life here.
Can I just ask you a question?
Those are the things that pulled me to this country, and I've been very fortunate to have good work and actually just learn my reo here.
So just asking a quick question, back if I can. A lot of whānau over here.
Are you there, Matua?
Yes, can you hear me?
Are you there, Matua?
Yep, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you now.
Oh, that's very good. Hey, can I just keeping the theme of that question before, the question I guess I have based on what I just heard, a lot of whānau and a lot of New Zealanders somehow think, a lot of Māori somehow think, living in Aotearoa, that somehow we get disconnected from our culture by being in another country, and yet what I've just heard is you've learnt little Māori while you've been there.
Aye. Yes, that's right. I've actually been doing it for, I started my journey in the year 2000, and I was fortunate to come across a kaiako teaching te reo Māori. And when we find out that we have a kaiako in our area, a lot of our people actually flock to that person so that they can start a kura reo. And we were quite fortunate to have Karewa Parengatai, who we call our Pau Tokomanawa, who started the founding kura reo in this country. Now, there has been previous kura reo, but we have been quite fortunate that with our rōpū, we were able to connect to Te Atarangi in New Zealand. And they actually made a rōpū, a founding rōpū of Te Atarangi. So we're part of their rōpū, we're actually a rohe on their side. And we've managed to branch all the way through to Sydney. And then we're also in Melbourne itself. We're currently doing a kura kaiawhina there. And we started our kura kaiawhina here in Sydney. And our kaiako was, our pauako was a Whaerahera Shortland. Now, previous to that, we were finding it hard because a lot of whānau were flocking to our kura, but we only had one kaiako. So a lot of us that have been doing the kura reo for a few years, we were actually wanting more. So what happened is Whaerahera, she decided to start a kura kaiawhina. And she, her kōrero was that we need to invest in our people who live in this country. It's not so much that we can bring over our kaiako, but we actually have whānau who have tamariki, also mokopuna in this country. And she also stated that we know that there is a hiahia for whānau to learn their reo, and that we're quite passionate on this side. And that's what she saw when she actually came to this country, how hungry we were, I should say, is to learn our reo. And because a lot of us, we didn't know our reo. And for myself, I actually knew nothing at all. So she started kura kaiawhina, and she said, this will be the first time I've actually done kura kaiawhina with whānau who are not fluent in Māori. But she said to us that as long as you know your ture, and that's our ture or Te Atarangi, she says, as long as you know that, you can do our kura. And we had Tarua Parangatai that gave out whānau that he felt would suit Te Atarangi.
He's one of my whananga.
Kura kaiawhina. Yes, yes. And now that was actually the first that was done anywhere, I should say, in the world. I'll say the world. And now they actually do this in New Zealand as well. They do kura kaiawhina as well. Because previously, when you had kura in New Zealand, what happened is that they would pick whānau out of their taura, and then they would mentor them. But this kura that we had, we actually brought people to actually teach. So we were getting them from different kura. And then that's like now they actually do that back home. But yes, so from that, we actually, when we finished our first year of theory, she said that, okay, this year you need to go out and start your kura. So she says that we had to go back to our own areas, we had to start our kura, and then she came over, and then we would do the practicums in front and with her. This was on a monthly basis. And then, well, after 4 years, we were certified. But each of us kaiawhina, and actually, just to go back, we actually started a kura kaiako as well.
What's the difference?
The difference is that with a kaiawhina, that's your first stage of teaching, and then when you go up to a kaiako, that's actually a different level. Now, from our kura, she got a few of our tauara, etahi tauara, and she actually moved them up to do a kura that's kura kaiako. Now, these whānau actually will go back to New Zealand ia marama every month for a year. And then for the second year, they did their practicum as well. And this is, I guess, this is a tana whakaaro, ko te whakaaro whaerahira, is how committed we were to actually learning our reo, is that whānau were actually using their own finances, their own time, keeping in mind that we're all full-time workers. And that was her, that was her whakaaro in bringing it here. Now, from there, we have kura all the way, all through Sydney, and now we've had three Kura Kai Awhina. So now we're on our third one. Now that one was delayed through to the COVID, but they've gone back to that. And we have this in Melbourne. So we actually have whānau that are teaching in Melbourne, and then they're going to have all their kura. They'll do the same as us. They'll go back to their own regions, their own areas. They'll start up a kura, and then they'll teach, and then they'll go under the umbrella of what we call our rōpū, is Te Pāpaka Nui a Māori ki Te Ātārangi. Yeah. So, so that has been... It's been a long journey, but it's been a very satisfying journey.
No, that's great. I mean, I lived in Redfern for 23 years, and the Church of Te Wairua Tapu was just up the road. And I do remember people like Ibon Tahi Gage and others running, organising little Māori classes at night for a lot of our whānau. Second question I've got for all of you, maybe, based on what you've just said, is the grass greener on the other side, do you think? Is life better in Australia versus New Zealand?
Can I just say something from So I'm, of all the rōpū, I'm probably the least experienced living in this country. So I'm only coming up to like 18 years. But in my opinion, back then, I think people dreamed of having a great life, but that great life, to be honest, doesn't exist here now. You have to work really hard to get what you want to reap the rewards of your mahi here. And I worked in the sector, the community services sector, the youth sector, for 10 years here for Youth of the Street. And what I found, one of the most common problems was that even though we have this partnership, this ANZAC relationship with this country, our people, and when I talk about our people, I'm talking about all people from home, no matter what colour, what creed, what race, you were not reaping the rewards of what the benefits of this country because you were not a New Zealand citizen.
Mm.
So one of the biggest push, so from a tribal perspective, right now, we're part of Taurahere, right? So our job is to keep our people connected to what's happening back home. The thing is, we have a strategic plan that the tribes put in place for us as well.
Mm.
One of them is the reo. So even though we have the kura kaupapa reo, we're also trying to develop our own meta here from a tainui perspective. So there's pan-tribal and then there's solely focusing on your own rohe. So right now we're in this transition period where we've got a strategic plan that the tribes presented to us. One of those things is to grow our own reo here in Koihākina. Two is to keep our people connected. And one of those biggest drives that we'll be doing after this event is encouraging our people to become New Zealand citizens, because this country has made it a lot easier than what
Sorry,
it was
Australian citizens, right?
Yeah, Australian citizens. But before, when you became a citizen, you had to relinquish your passport.
Mm.
So now it's gone back to dual citizenship for New Zealanders, and it's gone down to 3/4 of what you used to pay. So what you used to pay would be roughly close to 5-6 grand. You only now have to pay less than $500.
Wow.
So if whānau are listening, whānau are listening in regards to you living in this country, you need to seriously think about becoming citizens so that your baby, you don't have to send your babies home to go to university, to do further study, because they get no HEC support.
Surely you understand that, being a expat Kiwi yourself.
Mm.
So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, because a lot of our people are still New Zealand citizens, to be honest.
No, absolutely.
They're paying taxes, but what do they get out of it? Nothing. But Uncle, do you have anything to add on that?
Oh, sorry, myself. Yeah, look, when you say it's a greener on this side of the Tasman, I think there are areas there that you could look at and say, from a employment perspective, the availability of work for families, yes, in that respect, there's no doubt that the pastures are greener here for our people, our whānau from home.
Mm.
On the flip side of that, whilst you can have all of that, what is missing here is that cultural hub where you've got a marae, you've got, doesn't matter, iwi whānui, all the iwi have all their protocols and how to, you know, how to immerse yourself in the tikanga from each area, whereas here that's missing, right down to the point of, you know, having facilities so that we can we can do our tangihana and things like that. But that's probably the downside to it all. Having said that, as a collective, our Māori people over here in Australia, be it Sydney, Perth or whatever, we get by with what we have. And probably the important thing out of all of that is that we still try to maintain the tikanga. Aha ko wai, no whee, doesn't matter if you're Ngā Pui, Tai Nui, Ngā Te Parau. We try to uphold the traditions of our tūpuna. And that's very important across the board. Now, having said all of that, there are cultural kapahaka groups here that keep that level of tikanga and learning going. In Sydney here alone, we have at least 4 to 5 kapahaka groups. So spread across the Sydney base, that's a big plus for our mokopuna, for a lot of our rangatahi, and even pākeke. So, yeah, I think it's definitely greener here in terms of what I mentioned before. But again, I think it's already Ngā mentioned and Rini mentioned it about us being on the side of the Tasman. I think it's how we make the most of it. The other thing is, whilst we're missing all of those things that aren't available to us as it is in New Zealand, what we have here, we have a hub, and I say it's the biggest hub, Māori hub outside of Aotearoa, is that there are people within our Māori community here in Sydney that take up those roles in terms of mentoring, a lot with the kapahaka, and mentoring our young mokopuna that are born here and just trying to orientate them with the values of our tikanga and what's done back on the marae, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that sort of void there that is filled by a lot of people within our Māori community here. So, yeah, Machi, that's it for me.
Yeah, and just to finish up on this pātai, Matua, I believe if you're strong in your tikanga and you stand strong even in mainstream here, everything filters out into your work life, your home life, you know, your social life. And I'll give you an example. So I worked in an organisation predominantly where you could count the number of Māori on your hand, which was 2, right? And then we were multicultural for sure. So the thing was, every time there was something to do with a young person from back home in Aotearoa, they would always come and see me. And what I taught my organisation was that when I used to meet a young person, I never asked their name. I always look for the connection first. So wherever they said they were from, I asked if they knew family, if they'd been to this place. And when they said yes, then we started talking about that connection. And I could be in a conversation for 20 minutes before I said, what is your name? So what I taught people here was that your name is irrelevant. You need to find the connection to that person. And this is me taking what I have learned and implementing it into mainstream. And I think that is the beauty of us as a people here. And you know what? In all honesty, Australians love it.
All right.
They love having a Māori as a friend. They love having a Pacific Islander as a friend. And we need to kind of step away from those stereotypes that we're only good for sports and that's it. We are much better than that. We are starting to expand and grow in you know, many sectors here. I think what we need to do is we need to come together as a people and kind of really highlight our successes as a Māori race and work together on how we can kind of strengthen everything else, especially in main sector.
Absolutely. Main sector. Now, can you probably still hear me?
That's what I need to add.
Hello?
Oh.
Can you still hear me?
How much are we coming?
Is there anything that would bring you home? Would you move back to Aotearoa?
If my parents said, nah, get on the plane tomorrow and move home, I would drop everything and go, including my partner. Including my partner, because even though he's from New Zealand, he's Tongalawan. Well, his dad's English and his mum's Tongalawan, but he only has he has a very small family, and they live all in Brisbane. And he has no reason to go home, whereas I have all my family back in New Zealand. So if my parents said, I need you to come home, I would drop everything.
And what about your brothers? What about the others?
I'm actually the same. I'm thinking of going home because the last time I went to go and see my mum, you know, we talked about this. So, you know, my whakaaro is actually just to go home and be there for my mum. But in saying that, I would definitely immerse myself in our marae, in our tikanga, and even going back to kura in general. Mm. So, that's pushing me, That would pull me.
No, ka pai.
Yeah, kia ora matua. Kia ora matua. Yeah, look, as a Pākehā, I would definitely love to go home. The fact that our kids are born here and the moko are here, that sort of tips the scales a little bit. I think there's another thing too is that when we spoke about being greener here on this side of the Tasman, there's accessibility to medical and a lot of things like that that make it easier for, you know, for our elderly.
Mm.
So, that's a reasonable excuse to say here. I know people that have moved home and have, you know, that have found it quite hard when they got back home that with the services and different things. And I don't know, I'm just making that as a comment that's been relayed to me. But look, I think everyone over here would love to move home. It probably comes down to circumstances and, to the individual.
No, kia ora. Thank you very much for joining me, you fellas. And stay well.
Thank you, Matua. Kia ora. Thank you.
Kia ora. We'll do the outro now.